This is Chloe Wardropper. Today is November 3rd, 2016. I am a graduate student at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and I'm interviewing
Melody Mobley.
Melody Mobley.
And the interview is taking place at the 2016 SAF National Convention in Madison, Wisconsin, at the Monona Terrace Convention Center. This interview is sponsored by the Society of American Foresters and the University of Wisconsin Oral History Program, and is part of the SAF Oral History Project. So can you say your name and spell your last name, please?
I actually have two first names because I'm a quarter Cherokee.
Oh.
So it's Melody Staria Mobley. And you want me to spell my last name?
Yes, please.
M-O-B-L-E-Y.
Great, thank you. So Melody, to start off, can you tell me the story of how you came to be a forester or in the forestry profession?
I can. I've always loved being outdoors and natural resources. My mom used to take us out in the country. I'm from Louisville, Kentucky originally. And I just fell in love with being outdoors and animals and everything. So I went to college my first year in Kentucky at the University of Louisville in classical zoology, going to get a PhD in zoology. But I found that those curves that those other students were setting, because I was competing with the med school students, it was too much for me. I wasn't that serious by the time I went to college. I was third out of 500 and some students in high school and voted most outstanding black high school girl in Kentucky. But I was done with all of that. So while I was at the University of Louisville studying zoology, I decided that I wanted to study martial arts in Seattle with someone who had practiced under Bruce Lee, because he was already dead by the time I graduated from high school. So I transferred to the College of Forest Resources at the University of Washington, studying wildlife, though. And the Forest Service recruited me for their cooperative education program and a permanent job, which I needed because I had to pay my mom and my grandmother's medical bills. I had to have that permanent job. So the Forest Service actually insisted that I become a forester. They didn't want a wildlife biologist or hydrologist. They wanted a black female forester, and that's how I became a forester.
Thank you. So
different, isn't it?
It is.
A different path.
I love that it started with martial arts.
Yes, yes.
Can you tell me a little bit about your career as a forester?
I can. I started in what the Forest Service calls Region 6 in Washington State, up in the Cascade Mountains, and I worked there the late 70s, early 80s. Then I transferred, as the Forest Service always moves us a lot, down to Southern California on the Cleveland National Forest. When I was in Washington State, I did a little bit of everything as an orientation and an overview. Primarily genetics and tree improvement and reforestation was my focus up there. But then on the Cleveland National Forest, I was transferred down at a public affairs forester, which was a new position they created just for me, frankly, because they wanted to be able to have a black female forester. And so I was there in the supervisor's office, and I worked on two of the ranger districts. I did some timber sale work, they called it, but they were really just sanitation thinnings down there, no clear cuts or anything like that. Then I transferred to Northern California as an assistant district ranger on the Klamath. Then I moved down to Florida, and I managed the timber and wildlife programs. I had a 32 million board foot program of timber. And then I came to the Washington office, where I resided the rest of my career, with a detail to the Toyabe National Forest as Deputy Forest Supervisor. But I also got to go on executive loan to the World Wildlife Fund, and they sent me to Africa and Chile to work for a while, short periods. And I worked for the National Zoo in their tropical programs on executive loan. That basically means the Forest Service is paying my salary and expenses, but you get to work somewhere else.
Great. What was it like working abroad?
Oh, it was wonderful. I had the usual language challenges and some cultural things, especially in Africa. They're not used to seeing women out doing natural resource work. So that was a bit of a challenge, but I really, really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. And I was working in pelagic fisheries, which I knew so little about, so I learned a lot mm-hmm. working on the East Africa marine ecoregion.
Mm-hmm. Great. So how have you been involved with the Society of American Foresters?
Mainly I write letters and emails when I see something that I feel like I need to challenge a little bit. My primary interest now is inclusiveness and diversity. And I want to make a difference for the next person and help somebody else along. I want to open doors for folks. So not just with the SAF, but I meet people just on the street and say, can I help you with your resume? Can I recruit you into the Forest Service or into federal service? Can I be a sounding board or a mentor for you? Is there anything I can do to help? Which is what I've been doing primarily here, trying to find students and give them my card and say, please use me. If there's anything I can do to help, I'm here.
Mm, great. And as a before this particular role, did you have any other roles in the
I really didn't. Frankly, I was frustrated with mm-hmm. SAF because I felt like they never heard me. Mm-hmm. I would be talked over, I'd say something, and then a white male would say the same thing and he would get credit for it, and I was just ignored. Mm-hmm. And I care about people a lot, and I value people. And in SAF, I think that we're coming along, but I think we still have a long way to go as far as listening to each other and valuing diverse opinions.
So getting to kind of the meat, and we've already discussed this a little bit, but we're interested in understanding people's perceptions about diversity and inclusion in the forestry profession. So can you talk about how your cultural background, ethnicity, or gender have influenced your career as a forester?
Yes, I can. I really can. When I was in the Forest Service, there was a lot of abusive language that I had to tolerate, particularly in Florida. People would tell me, I'd say, hi, how are you doing? They'd say, oh, I'm working like an N-word, for example. And then they'd say, oh, Miss Melody, excuse me, I didn't mean to say that, because I was signing the checks, you know, and doing all the evaluation of their work. So I know if they were saying that in front of me, I can just imagine what they were saying behind my back. And other things that went on that just were really tough to bear. When I was in Skykomish, I was 18 and 19 years old. I didn't have a car. I didn't have any place to get my hair done. I wasn't wearing it natural. I liked it straightened. There was no place to do that. I couldn't always get some of the special foods that I liked to eat. I didn't have a church where I was comfortable. And just being the only black female in an all-white community, everyone knew me, but I would have to learn who everyone else was. And they were kind, but it's unsettling to be in a fishbowl all the time. It's tough to relax. It's stressful. And if another employee would come over to my house, not just being black and female, but being single, they assumed, I was told by some of the townspeople that I was doing inappropriate things out in the woods when I was working with their husbands. As if, I'll just leave it at that. That was impossible to have happened, but just to be accused of that sort of thing is demeaning, insulting, and just ugly. And that's happened more than once. When I was in Florida, there was an African-American male who would come over to my house and play cards. And because his car was parked in my house, the district ranger pulled me into his office and warned me about inappropriate behaviors. So just completely inappropriate things. It was none of his business anyway, what I did on my own time. But I certainly wasn't doing anything inappropriate. When the guys got together to play cards, they didn't invite me. And this was the only person on the district who would spend any time with me, he and his wife and child. So those sorts of things have just been just tough. Another thing, I was assaulted when I was 20 years old, sexually assaulted on federal property, on government time. And this was in Skykomish, and I didn't feel like I could confide in anyone about it because I was already accused of doing inappropriate things. And I carried that for years before I could get the counseling that I needed to deal with that. And being approached inappropriately by people, particularly people in leadership, was a challenge in the Forest Service because I don't know if they felt empowered or that they could get away with it, but the sexual harassment thing was just awful. And I've always tried to be there for other women and men to be a sounding board and say, hey, I don't have any skeletons in my closet. I always did things according to the book and legally, and I had good performance ratings, and I retired as a GS-14, so I had the grade to protect me. And many of the lower grade people suffered a lot of abuse. So I always said, bring it to me and let me take the hit, because I can bear it, and you at your stage in your career, you can't. Or if somebody does something to you, let me know, and I'll challenge that person about it. So that was something that I could do to help. But finally, in 1996, I'd absolutely had it. I'd been assaulted sexually. I had a woman I supervised a week after I returned from a major surgery hit me in the abdomen with a book card. And I had a colleague who was our IT person, I went to him for help, get mad at me, and he hit me and knocked me over so hard it fractured one of my vertebrae in my back. So after all of that, in 1996, I filed an EEO complaint against the Forest Service. And I'm not allowed to disclose all the terms of the settlement agreement, but I feel like I did well in, I can use the word prevailing in the case. But after that, the retaliation by management was brutal, to the point that finally I had to retire on disability in 2005 with clinical depression and chronic low back pain, which my doctors all said under oath was related to my work environment stress that I had experienced. But if I didn't stand up and file the EEO complaint, nobody else felt strong enough to do it, and they weren't in a place in their career where they could do it.
Wow. Well, thank you for sharing all of that.
Sure. I like to talk about it because if we don't talk about it, things will never change.
Yeah. So can you talk about the ways that your gender and color affected the choices that you made in the forestry profession?
I tried real hard not to let them. I tried to move as much as a white male would because I didn't want people to be able to say, I do believe honestly that I was hired because I'm a black female. However, I don't think I would have been retained and promoted the way I was if I wasn't very, very good. I couldn't be as good as the guys. I had to be better than the guys. And every time I moved 9 times in 11 years to get the experience I needed. And so people still said I only got what I got because I was a black female, but I knew that I got what I got because I deserved those promotions and deserved those positions. So that's the way I chose to do it. I wasn't able to turn the ship, but I was able to get a few lifeboats off here and there. Choosing my battles, that's the biggest thing I learned in this career. So I didn't try to model white male behavior. I still love people, I love talking to people. And many foresters in the Forest Service believe that they know the science, they know what's best for the land. But I feel that they lose sight of the fact that that's public land. And we need to have listening skills and try to do what the public wants us to do. And that was a real difference for me. And so I dealt with a lot of, I was ostracized. What would the zation form of that word be? I was ostracized. I'll just say it like that. A lot, because I was different. Or I have 6 holes in my ears. Or I may wear green toenail polish to express myself and my creativity, which many of them weren't willing to do. So they would often, for example, go have lunch together, and I was never invited. I was socially very isolated and lonely for those 28 years in the Forest Service. If I had to do it again, I would, and nobody forced me to be a forester, and I wanted to make a difference, but it was never easy.
Great, thank you.
Sure.
Let me see if there are any follow-ups that would be helpful. Do you think the forestry profession is welcoming to new ideas?
And no, I don't. No. Not at all. Hmm. I think it's very conservative and very traditional and very militaristic. And I think people who are a little different or ideas that are a little different, it's a tough row to hoe. Because people, I don't believe, in the forestry profession are real open, either to the public or to other foresters who value social skills and social issues, for example.
Okay. So let's talk about how you see SAF playing a role in enhancing diversity and inclusion.
I'm really excited to see the diversity and inclusion, excuse me, inclusion track tomorrow. And that Terry Sherrick, I just adore him. I just met him. And he's done decades of work in diversity and inclusion. And so I'm excited to work with him and hear him speak. And frankly, he's the one who allowed me to be here at this convention. I couldn't, as a retired person on a disability pension, I couldn't afford the fee to come to SAF meetings, and I certainly couldn't afford my travel. So I think that might be prohibiting some of the inclusiveness that we want. But it's nice to see that track, that SAF is supporting that, and that at least we're beginning to have a discussion about it without people being shouted down. Because I was shouted down at our local branch in the Forest Service so many times when I'd want to talk about any people issues at all or anything other than timber management. You know, timber was king. And my background was in timber so that I could have the authority to speak. But I certainly value people more than just a commodity.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think SAF can do more or differently to increase diversity?
I really like the way we're supporting students. I think bringing in young people and providing scholarships, grants, a mentor program for them, supporting them at their universities, having the ability, I was delighted to see that the Forest Service is hiring authority here so we can actually do something concrete and specific here. I believe those are the sorts of things that SAF should focus on to really try to bring itself into the 21st century.
Mm-hmm. What about the role of other institutions like universities and nonprofits?
I love nonprofits more than almost anything because they seem to have the majority of the free thinkers, particularly those that support non-timber issues in natural resources, really free, creative people. I think we need more relationships with those groups, wildlife groups, for example, to invite more of them and include them in our sessions, because I think SAF needs to not just look at forests as just trees and timber, but rather have a more ecosystem approach and include all of the resources in the forest and not the focus has been timber for so many years.
Mm-hmm. And what about the Forest Service itself?
The Forest Service has a long, long way to go. I was the first black female forester hired 39 years ago, and today there are 6 only. At points of time, there have been up to 20 or 25 black female foresters, but nothing is done to retain them. And being just thrown in a hostile work environment without any support, it's impossible to retain people. The ones who have been able to be successful are the ones who have modeled white male behavior. And frankly, I just was not willing to do that.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think they can do differently?
They can listen. They can provide mentors for people who come in. I brought a plan that the Forest Service created in the 1990s. It's toward a multicultural organization. It's a wonderful plan, but it was never implemented. Forest Service is great at producing plans, but then nothing is actually done. After I filed my EEO complaint, the retaliation against me by management was just horrible, inexcusable, and intolerable. That's when I developed clinical depression. My director actually said to me once that when I was talking to her, she felt threatened, like I was going to physically assault her. It's like the old adage about a white woman and a black male being on an elevator, and the white woman feels like she's got to clutch her purse. I've never hit anybody in my life, not ever. Wouldn't even think about that. But she saw me as a physical threat somehow, and I can only think it was because of my race. And other things happened like that that made me really sad and feel like after 28 years, I could make no more progress there. So they eventually retired me on disability. They could have. I have two federally recognized disabilities, clinical depression and degenerative disc disease in my spine. And by federal law, the Forest Service is required to accommodate federally recognized disabilities, but they refused to do that and instead retired me when I could still be working to this day. And it hurts. Mm-hmm. It really hurts. I devoted over half my life to that agency, and to see them get away with that. One of the associate deputy chiefs who supervised me when I filed that EEO complaint left the Forest Service or was forced out. However, within several months, he was brought back and given a $10,000 senior executive service cash award for performance. And one of his performance elements was civil rights. So even though I was experiencing being assaulted twice and other things that I was able to prove were discrimination, he was still given a $10,000 award with perfect scores in civil rights. And that still happens. It's like it's not taken seriously, and no one's held accountable.
So what, I don't know if you covered the kinds of things that you thought the Forest Service can do.
People need to be held accountable. And I don't know how to make that happen. Federal laws are being broken. EEO complaints are filed, proven discrimination, but nothing changes. And I don't know how to change that unless you change the people, because either you're held accountable or you aren't. Mm-hmm. And we talked about people being brought in and then retention measures being put in place and things being done to ensure that there's not a hostile work environment and that women especially aren't being sexually harassed. It's just, it goes on every day and it makes me very sad.
Mm-hmm. So, slightly transitioning.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you see the profession of forestry going in the next 20 years?
20 years. I think we'll be a lot more diverse. And I think we'll look at things. I think climate change is the biggest issue that we face right now. I think that will be more of our focus. And we've got so many lands that because of the beginnings of climate change, keeping fire out of ecosystems that need fire, and management practices like the Park Service, where it's all preservation. Those aren't natural ways to manage ecoregions, you know. And I think we'll see more fires that are out of control. These big, big wildfires, of course, sterilize the soil, so then you get the erosion and the runoff. And then with the water rising, that's going to cause a bunch of issues, too. Also, our threatened and endangered species. Those budgets aren't growing like they need to. And I think we're going to lose more species, too, in the next 20 years. But I'm encouraged that I think there will be more women and people of color, and that that'll bring in the best and the brightest ideas from everybody. And hopefully everybody will have a seat at the table so we can develop the best strategies that we need to affect these global issues. I think we'll begin to look at things globally more than we do right now within the next 20 years.
Mm-hmm. What about 100 years?
100 years. Wow.
I know.
100 years. Well, we'll definitely be diverse. Perhaps there'll even be more women and people of color than white males by then. Because I think women definitely have the skills to look at things, to do planning, and to look at things long-term, and have outstanding management skills, even more than males many times, because we have to do those things just in our daily lives more sometimes. So I think we'll be managing things globally, certainly, within 100 years. I think we'll have lost many, many species by then, unfortunately. Because I think we're beyond the point of no return now with some of these species. And we don't even know every species that's out there. When I went to Florida in 1987, I mentioned I had a 32 million board foot program, timber program. And that national forest wasn't even doing surveys for threatened and endangered plants. And that I found that shocking, because everywhere I'd been up to that point, they were doing that. And these people were just slicking off timber quicker than anything without any attention to that. And I don't know if once I left, they maintained doing those surveys or not. But that's just one example, real life example that I could share.
Mm-hmm.
So that's as far as I can see in 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think SAF will still be here,
mm-hmm.
and we'll be better by then, because we will be more inclusive.
Okay. So I have a few additional questions, because
okay.
we still have some time.
Okay.
So how, and we might have covered a little bit of this before, but how have you seen the profession of forestry change throughout your career?
Well, it's good in the Forest Service, because the Forest Service really emphasizes training. And that seems to be even increasing more as the agency goes on. Certainly bringing in more women. Women are doing better than they have been, but there's still the challenge of having equity in leadership positions, not just bringing women in at the lower level or people of color in at lower levels and then not promoting us or them. That's still a challenge. I think retention is getting worse. I think the environment is so hostile that people are just, it used to be that training was the draw. But actually, the money is good, too. People think you can't make money in the government. My salary was $114,000 when I retired as a GS-14. So I think we are getting some people of color and women in those higher-level positions, but not nearly enough. We're not at parity with the civilian labor force yet. We're using more technology now than we did when I first came in. There was a lot of suspicion of technology, and people wanted to do things the way they'd always been done. But there seems to be more receptiveness now to using technology. Those were the major changes that I saw before I left in 2005.
So what has been the most rewarding aspect of your career?
Getting to work in different ecoregions, I really love that. I learned so much, and the training that I was provided by the Forest Service, that was fantastic. Most of all, though, I have to say that the people I met predominantly outside the agency, I've made some lasting friendships, and traveling to different regions of the Forest Service and traveling overseas, I made life friends, not just colleagues. So that to me has been the most rewarding.
Mm-hmm. So what, and we've covered this as well, but what have been the biggest challenges in your career, and how have you overcome or dealt with those challenges?
The sexual harassment was really tough. I tried to keep myself out of situations where these people in leadership would have the opportunity to approach me. For example, at this meeting, I have my own hotel room, and I'm very selective with who I let know which room I'm in, because that put me in a vulnerable position when I was with the Forest Service on occasion. So I learned that through the school of hard knocks, if you will. And then having to file an EEO complaint was the hardest thing I ever did, because I loved the Forest Service and most of the people I found wonderful. But some of those people in leadership were very, very challenging, and they had all the power and got away with so much and really, really hurt me a lot. And being forced to retire when I still had the skills to contribute, that was the worst pain I ever went through in my professional career.
Yeah, that sounds really awful.
You can imagine, yeah. And I'm not the only one. Yeah. Other people have been forced out, too. Mm. They throw money at us in a settlement agreement as if that makes it different. Well, no one wants to retire when they're 46 and can work. Who wants to sit at home? You know, I'd much rather be working. I'm 58 now, and I have age challenges to get back into the workforce now. I'd never want to work for the Forest Service again because of the things that I went through with them. But I'd love to work for a nonprofit or another agency. But getting in now at this age is really tough.
Mm-hmm. Can you think of a specific person that helped you along the way?
Jetty Wilds helped me a lot. Lyle Laverty helped me a lot. Stu Pickford helped me a bunch. Christina Vogt helped me more than almost anyone. Linda Brubaker was fabulous to me. There are so many who did so much for me along the way. Tony Durrell, I wouldn't have made it my first year. Roger Skistad set up my first season in the Forest Service, a wonderful orientation program where I'd spend a day or two in every field on the Ranger District and get exposed to everything. I've had wonderful people who mentored me in my career, and certainly couldn't have survived 28 years without those fabulous people.
Mm-hmm. So,
it's so easy to name those people. There's so many. I know I'm leaving somebody out.
Yeah. And so what advice would you give to a student or a new forester just starting off?
I think the most important thing is find a mentor. I wouldn't be shy at all. If someone doesn't offer to help, observe people for a little bit and find someone and just ask them. And I believe most people in, a position of authority or be someone who can help you in your career would be delighted to help if asked. I think that's the most critical thing. And second, I would say, be flexible in what assignments that you take, because the next position may not be your ideal one, but it can open a door to that ideal position down the line. And two, unless there's something obvious that you just can't stand, getting exposed to more and more things can open your eyes to other things you may want to do. So I think one needs to be as flexible as they possibly can. Mm-hmm. I think those two things really helped me a lot.
Mm-hmm. So is there anything that we haven't covered that you want to add about forestry or SAF or diversity?
I can't think of a thing.
Okay.
I go back and forth with SAF. I renew my membership, then I get upset about something, and I don't renew my membership the next year, or I'll be a member for 4 or 5 years, and then something will happen. And it's usually about inclusiveness, or feeling like I'm not heard, or someone else isn't heard. It doesn't have to just be me, but I'll be so glad when we really do listen to each other better and really try to value each other's opinions. I don't see people getting shouted down here like we did at my little unit, but I still haven't seen proof that we're really listening to each other yet, so I hope by the end of the convention I'm seeing some of that.
What would that look like?
I think being in a smaller group versus the plenary group and seeing how discussions are held, because I haven't seen any discussions yet.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I'm looking forward to that.
Great. So to finish up, we have a few demographic questions.
Sure.
Thank you, Chloe.
I've enjoyed talking with you.
I have too.
I hope I haven't shared too much, but I think it's important to be open and honest.
Yeah, of course.
To make the best difference for the next person coming along. But I hope I didn't put you on the spot or embarrass you at all.
Not at all.
Good.
Not at all. So what year were you born?
1958.
Okay. And what gender do you identify as?
I'm female.
And what's your ethnic, racial, or cultural background?
Primarily African American, but I'm also a quarter Cherokee Indian.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest is white.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you so much for your participation.
Thank you, Chloe. Thank you so much.
I will.
You're an expert. I can tell you've done this.
Stop
you made
the
me
record.
So.